Assalamu alaikum and welcome back. So believing or thinking that to have full reliance on Allah Azza wa Jal and dependence, that you should not take the means, this is against tawakkul. So if someone goes to Hajj, for example, and he does not take money, he does not take food, what are you doing? He said, I'm going tawakkul on Allah Azza wa Jal. This is insane. If someone sits in the home and says, oh Allah, grant me a child. Oh Allah, grant me a good righteous son. And people tell him, get married. He said, no, I have tawakkul on Allah. You will not be reigned by children. It's not reigning children anymore. No, you have to work for it. Likewise, you're hungry, you have to cook food. So your dependence on Allah Azza wa Jal is matched or must be followed by taking the means. And the Prophet was the greatest of those who had tawakkul on Allah. Yet, when he fought, he had a helmet that protected his head. He had armors. He had all the means to protect him. When he left and migrated from Mecca to Medina with Abu Bakr, he didn't say, Allah will guide me. He hired a professional person, a professional guide, to take him to Medina, who knows the routes and who knows how to take them there safely. So we have to also understand that Islam does not promote people not to be active, not to work, not to take the means. Yet the opposite also is completely unacceptable. And that is when you depend on the means entirely. So if you depend on the medication to cure you and not on Allah Azza wa Jal who cures you, if you depend on your salary to buy food and to pay for the rent and to take your children to schools, yet you neglect that Allah is the provider, Allah is the supporter and the supplier of provision, this is shirk. Why? Because you're depending on the means rather than depending on Allah. They have to go side by side, with the dependence on Allah having an edge. And the means follow, because Allah is the one who told us to take the means. Where did the Prophet ﷺ enter and how did he exit to Mecca? Hadith of Ibn Umar, may Allah be pleased with him and his father, said that the Prophet of Allah ﷺ entered Mecca from Kada or Kuday. And Kada is a place known in Mecca, which is the highest thaniyah, which is Al-Batha, and used to leave Mecca from the lower thaniyah. So these are places, locations of Mecca. Explaining them and describing them would not do anything to you. However, you know that the Prophet entered from one place and exited from another place. Why is that? Scholars say that this is similar to what was happening in Eid. You recall that in Eid, the Prophet ﷺ used to go to the Musalla from one way and returns home from a different route. So likewise, this is to have as many areas witnessing and testifying your form of worship on the Day of Judgment. And this is convenient for the Prophet ﷺ, as he came from one direction, which is from Medina, and then leaving from the other direction. And it depends from person to person how they manage to enter and what is more convenient. The following hadith is narrated by Abdullah ibn Umar, may Allah be pleased with him. He says that the Prophet ﷺ entered the Kaaba along with Usama ibn Zayd, Uthman ibn Talha, and Bilal, may Allah be pleased with them all, and closed the door. Entered what? Entered the Kaaba. After closing the door, when they opened it, I was the first man to enter. Meaning Abdullah ibn Umar did not go. So he was the first to enter. He asked Bilal, did the Prophet ﷺ pray? Bilal replied, yes, between the two Yemeni pillars. If you go to the Kaaba, you will find that it has only pillars inside. There's nothing in it, as some people think that there is a grave, or there is a tomb, or there is some sort of structure. No, it is not. And when the Prophet عليه الصلاة والسلام entered Al-Kaaba, he went in there with Usama ibn Zayd and Bilal. And when was that? That was on the 10th year of Al-Hijrah, as some scholars say, because Hajj was made mandatory on the 9th year of Al-Hijrah. And the Prophet ﷺ conquered Mecca on the 8th year of Al-Hijrah. So if the Prophet entered it ﷺ in the 8th year of Hijrah, it's a possibility, but there were a lot of statues, a lot of idols, and that is why the Prophet ﷺ did not perform Hajj on the 9th year. He instructed Abu Bakr and Ali to take some people and announce in Mecca that after this year, no mushrik will be allowed in, and no person performing Umrah or Hajj is allowed to go in nude, because only the people of Mecca were allowed to make tawaf wearing clothes, wearing their ihram. Others who came from outside, they had to perform tawaf in the nude, unless they knew someone in Mecca who would lend them clothes. And this was completely prohibited in Islam, as Islam, as we know, protects the chastity of people and covers their awrah. So the Prophet ﷺ entered the Kaaba with Uthman ibn Talha. Who is Uthman ibn Talha? Uthman ibn Talha ibn Shaybah, a Shaybi. And there, up till today, are the holders of the keys of the Kaaba. So his descendants, until today, remain, and they are the custodians and the holders of the keys of the Kaaba. The Prophet entered there with Usama ibn Zayd ibn Haritha, may Allah be pleased with him and with his father, and with Uthman ibn Talha and with Bilal. And they closed the door. Now we know that Abdullah ibn Umar is so close to the Prophet, yet it is not a place for people to come in and sit. So he had to have his seclusion there and not to be bothered by other people or other worshippers who wanted to know what is he doing. So once they closed the door and then came out, Abdullah ibn Umar was the first to ask Bilal, and he asked him, did he pray? Because the first thing that someone may think, if we're instructed to face the Qibla, if you're inside, what to do? Which direction should I pray? I'm inside of it. So he asked him, and he said yes. And he pointed to him the place where he prayed. And this is why scholars differed, whether it is permissible to pray in the Kaaba or not. And the answer is definitely yes. And they differed whether it's only voluntary prayer that is permissible, or any prayer, even the mandatory. And the most authentic opinion is even mandatory prayers. And the scholars also differed regarding praying on top of the Kaaba. Is it permissible or not? And they reported a hadith, but this hadith is weak, where they say that Ibn Umar, may Allah be pleased with him, the Prophet forbade praying in a junkyard, in a slaughterhouse, in a graveyard, in the middle of the road, in a Turkish bath, it's like a sauna, and in the places of camels, in the barns of camels, and on top of the Kaaba. But this hadith is not authentic, and therefore scholars said that the most authentic opinion is that praying on top of the Kaaba is permissible. Now this is a hypothetical situation, because who will be able to go on top of the Kaaba except a very few handful of people, usually people who are working in maintenance. You never see people go on top of the Kaaba. Inside the Kaaba, yes. It is possible, if you know someone, to go once they are cleaning the Kaaba, washing the Kaaba, and you know that we wash the Kaaba twice or three times a year. So at that time, people may enter the Kaaba, then you can be among those who wash it and enter it. But is it something of importance that you should look up to? No. Is it sunnah to pray in the Kaaba? No, because the companions did not do it, may Allah be pleased with them all. But the Prophet did it, alayhi salatu wasalam. Hence, if you follow that sunnah without any obligations, without needing to pull any strings, then inshallah, this is permissible, but there isn't any specific reward for that. Now, from this hadith, we learn how careful were the companions of the Prophet ﷺ to learn his sunnah. Ibn Umar was anticipating the door to be opened to be the first one to ask. Why? Because we know that Ibn Umar, may Allah be pleased with him, was very careful, was very keen on learning the sunnah of the Prophet ﷺ as much as possible. And also we know that the Prophet ﷺ favored some companions over the others. For example, Zayd ibn Haritha was the adopted son of the Prophet ﷺ until adoption was forbidden in Islam. Yet he remained one of his closest companions to the Prophet because he treated him as a son. And when Zayd ibn Haritha had a son, which is Usama, the Prophet loved Usama greatly. And Usama used to be known as the love of the Prophet ﷺ and the son of his love, because he was like his grandson. Zayd was his adopted son, and then Usama, the son of Zayd, he also loved him a lot, alayhi salatu wasalam. Yet his love to him was not a reason to go against the Sharia. And this is something that the Prophet ﷺ would never ever play with. That is why when Usama ibn Zayd went to the Prophet, when a woman from Bani Makhzum was arrested for stealing, and the Prophet sentenced that she must be punished for that, Usama ibn Zayd was approached by her family, telling him, please go and talk to the Prophet alayhi salatu wasalam. So when Usama went to the Prophet alayhi salatu wasalam, trying to make the sentence a little bit lesser, not to amputate the whole hand, the Prophet was furious and angry. And he said, Usama, are you talking to me in one of the prescribed punishment of Allah Azza wa Jal? By Allah, if Fatima, the daughter of Muhammad, stole something, I would have cut her hand off. And this shows us that when it comes to Islam, when it comes to the laws, nobody is above the law. Not even the daughter of the Prophet alayhi as-salatu wassalam. This is all the time we have. Until we meet next time, fi amanillah. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.